I'm Georgie Frost, and this is the Brexit Ready podcast from Audio UK. We're talking to people in or around the audio business in Britain, as well as getting expert opinion on what the landscape might be after Brexit and how companies should prepare. There's obviously a lot of uncertainty right now, and even after a deal is struck or not struck, things may of course change again. Now, as we look at a future outside the single market and possibly the customs union, there are a range of possible changes which could affect the audio industry. These areas could be as broad-ranging as whether you'll need a visa or a new driving licence to do business in mainland Europe, how to ensure that data transfers with other EU countries can continue, how to make sure any EU citizens that work for you have registered with the EU settlement scheme, and whether you need to do anything more to protect your intellectual property. Paul March is Audio UK's legal counsel. He's on hand to give members industry standard legal advice. He has nearly two decades of experience of working in the media and entertainment industry. Thank you very much for joining us, Paul.
Hello, Georgie. Nice to be here.
The impact on the audio industry, deal or no deal, we're going to have to look at, aren't we? But just leading up to that, before we get into the specifics, have you noticed any changes in this interim period from when we voted to leave to now? The uncertainty, has that already had impact?
I think the uncertainty has been managed. Nobody loves uncertainty, So it's clearly unhelpful. I don't think we can quantify, if you like, an economic cost to that uncertainty. I think that's in the realms of speculation. But you may have less people from Europe coming over to the United Kingdom to work here. So therefore, our members will not have the same availability of labour and talent that they had prior to the referendum, notwithstanding that nothing's changed, because psychologically something has changed. And I think sometimes we lose sight of the fact that the individuals make their decisions for various motivations, and that our decision to leave Europe and the impending departure, albeit nobody's quite sure when or how it will be affected, does impact on individual decisions and relocations. So I suspect on that level, at least on staffing, it probably already has made a difference on freelancers and contractors.
Is that one of the main issues that people within the industry come to you about? Because I imagine a few years back, it was a very different time. The questions that you were answering were probably a little bit, well, different to what we are now. Or actually, is it very much the same thing? Not a lot of questions are being asked about Brexit?
I think this is obviously something that, you know, the whole country and all of us, both professionally and personally, to some degree, are impacted on and thinking about. There is a possibility that in terms of its current impact, we might even be overstating it. If you look at UK audio producers, most of it operates within the United Kingdom. Mm. Most of the programming is for UK audiences made in the UK. So I think one can overestimate, if you like, the immediate impact of this. But going forward, and particularly when we do exit, assuming we exit, and the terms on which we exit, there will be far greater implications.
Well, because we can't forget that what we're negotiating at the moment, deal or no deal, is just the divorce. There's a whole new life to be led after that, where we do try and work out what this will mean, particularly for the audio industry going forward. What are the areas that are most likely to change, do you think? I think we forget just how entangled, I guess, we are with the EU. What does the EU currently do for the audio industry, or how linked are we to the EU, and therefore how will it change?
I think one very interesting area that will change, and it's actually on the government's website on the briefing notes, is the country of origin principle, which effectively means that where you're a producer and you create a program in audio but also audiovisual television, and that program is then distributed outside the UK but it's carried via satellite, cable, online, you don't actually need a license to extend outside the UK. So there's a reciprocity. Effectively, Europe at the moment operates as a single economic space. No difference between being in New York or Michigan, between being in the United Kingdom and France in terms of the economic transfer of works. All of that falls away if we exit and there is then no deal. Mm. Now, that's not to say the British government wouldn't want to roll that over. We absolutely would want to roll that over, because we are by far the greatest intellectual property producer in terms of programming in Europe. So we wouldn't want to see these rules change. But there's no guarantee that the Europeans would allow us to roll it over in the event of a no deal. And also, you then get, without going too much into the rounds,
How much of a say would they have then in that?
Who, the British?
The EU in allowing us to do that or not? Could we not implement something unique?
We could do whatever we like within the United Kingdom. But the point is, we're talking about...
To a degree.
Yes, exactly. I think we've proven we probably can't. But in theory, we can.
Yes.
But the issue is not whether or not the programming's licensed here in the UK. It's whether by being licensed in the UK, that license then extends seamlessly throughout Europe. Presently, it does. A bit like when you have your mobile phone and you fly to Spain or France, there's no roaming charges. Everything within Europe, relatively speaking, operates as a single economic space. The rationale, I think, was from Brexit to effectively depart from that space. The question for us is, what will the cost of that departure be? The answer is, none of us really know. If we just look at briefly this country of origin principle, where it could be quite interesting. So at the moment, I'm a US producer, and I license programming to the UK. And the UK, under EU rules, has the right to distribute that program in its form across the European Union, or at least to be accessed. Once we leave Europe, we won't have that right as a legal proposition. So I'm a US producer. I would say to the UK licensee, well, I don't want you distributing my programming across Europe because you're effectively appropriating economic value. I'd rather license it to RTE. I'd rather license it to the Irish channel or to the Dutch, who will have English language programming. It doesn't suit me to effectively have these rights bundled. By exiting Europe, whilst there are opportunities, we actually in some ways lose a framework to negotiate on the basis of that framework. Effectively, in non-legal terms, all bets are off.
Are you talking in terms of deal or no deal or both?
Both. No deal is clearly the oh gosh, what happens. Deal is slightly simpler because, assuming there is a deal and assuming Parliament would pass a deal, my understanding is there's an implementation period, which effectively means we all live in a kind of dreamland that nothing's actually changed until December 2020, and then potentially that 2 years after. And I think if Brexit has shown anything to most of us, it's that deadlines keep moving. So I think it would be questionable to take as a cast iron assurance that if we passed a deal that actually we would have an FTA, free trade agreement, negotiated in the next 14 months, and therefore not need to extend that. I mean, I would take a bet, and if I took a bet, I would say the likelihood is we would almost certainly end up extending the implementation period. And whilst we're in implementation period, to quote our former prime minister, nothing has changed. Everything has changed, but actually nothing has changed. Maybe that's why it's driving everybody crazy. It's a very strange kind of dynamic.
It is very confusing, which in your professional capacity as legal counsel, how do you even begin to advise people legally speaking when you just don't know what's going to happen? We don't even know what deal we're going to have. And when we do know, we don't know how that's going to be implemented.
I think the answer is you try the best you can. Again, I think one can overplay at least near term, the impact on members. Remembering at the moment that A, as of today, we haven't exited. B, if we exit, the Benn amendment or the Benn rule means that apparently we can't exit on no deal. And that at least kicks the ball down the field for another 3 months. Let's assume that outside of a change of government, assuming we don't exit on no deal, then all the various rules and regulations will be rolled over anyway. So my advice to members is obviously be aware, but don't be too panicked by it because you're being panicked by something that at the moment A, hasn't changed, and B, I don't think we cannot particularize the changes that happen. And briefly, our members are not manufacturers. Most of them are not in integrated supply chains. Whilst I have no doubt there will be challenges, I think it would overstate the situation to say our members were probably the most affected by this. They will be affected, and there are other areas we can go on to, but I don't think they are the most affected sector.
Where do you think within our industry will be most affected then by potential changes?
Expanding it out, just not simply through programming, but to audio and music. Music tours are going to be humongously affected by this. For them, it's a massive change because at the moment you've got free movement of people and goods. And all of that, potentially assuming there isn't this implementation period, and there will be an implementation period. And again, I don't, if one just takes a step back, the whole basis of the intention of the government during the implementation period would be to negotiate an FTA, free trade agreement. Mm. So the British government invariably would look as far as possible to continue with the same rights within the European space it already has. The chances are the Europeans won't allow that, because if we're going to have all the same rights without making the same payments, query how well that works for them. So you do have this tension. But you know, in terms of music tours, you're going to have much more paperwork. You're going to have for carnets for goods. You're going to have work visas. You'll have social security payments. The fiscal rules might change as well on money transfers. And a lot of these things are quite marginal anyway. So I think it will affect things significantly. Save for one thought, which I haven't read, and this is probably me going a little bit off-piste, but it seems to me that, again, assuming there is not a no-deal situation, because anybody who can tell you what's going to happen with no-deal, I think, candidly, is maybe not being correct, because I don't think anybody really knows. But assuming we're looking at a deal, Northern Ireland will emerge from this with a somewhat unique position, both within the United Kingdom, but effectively having seamless access to the European market. It would seem to me quite logical that a lot of UK economic activity, which was driven to go to Europe, would find Belfast and Northern Ireland an attractive place to come to go from.
Mm.
So I could actually see, I'm not going into politics, but I could actually see some potential economic upside for Northern Ireland from this. It would be the natural place for various UK entities to have a base where they were looking to access the European market, particularly for things like tours.
Mm.
Because if you're a Northern Irish citizen, I think you will have the same rights to go anywhere in Europe, unlike us. I mean, it gets really complicated.
A lot of this is, of course, it's crystal ball gazing. What you talk about with Northern Ireland could potentially be an upside for them. Do you see any other areas of actual opportunity in all of this? You rolled your eyes there, I have to say.
Yeah, and that's not meant politically, because I'm not going to politics. It's difficult to see where this goes. Mm. Clearly, again, the economic, and it's a really interesting change of, you know, again, I know we're talking about commercials, but I think you can't divorce commercials from the political drive. Under the May government, the May government effectively was looking to hug the European space very closely. It would appear that her rationale was effectively end free movement and just about do everything else European. The Johnson government has a very, very different approach to this. You could say they actually believe in this. And, you know, whether they're right or wrong is not for me to say, but they do believe in this. And for Brexit to have any logic, it must mean a separation, a degree of divergence or separation from the European economic space. And one example of that is you've got the level playing field clause, which previously was within the withdrawal agreement, has now been moved to the political declaration. The withdrawal agreement was legally binding. A political declaration is aspiration. The more we diverge from European regulations, it's reasonable to surmise the greater the barriers to our accessing the European market. Mm. But for us to sign these free trade agreements with third-party states, principally, say, the Americans, we need to diverge from the European regulations. Because if we don't diverge from the European regulations, what are we offering the Americans that they don't already have? And then where's the incentive? For there to be an economic logic to this, there has to be some form of separation from the European space. But again, the cost of that separation, I couldn't say. The opportunities that flow, if you're going back, you're saying, what are the wins? What are the opportunities?
Yeah.
And I understand that. We all hope there are some wins in this. But that would only become apparent once you knew the terms of say, an FTA with the Americans or a third-party state. And none of us know that.
Of course, but we did hear a lot, didn't we? We heard a lot of stuff before the actual vote, the referendum, but about red tape. And I'm wondering where perhaps companies, audio production companies, found themselves a bit entangled in this so-called red tape, and whether, you know, where does it lie?
I suppose the danger with that is the initial, the proposition with red tape will only grow short term anyway. Because at the moment, we don't have red tape with Europe, and we will have some red tape. You can only look at, you know, the back and forth on the withdrawal agreement and even the flow of things between Britain and Northern Ireland within the UK. So red tape will increase. I guess where you could have less red tape is you've got, let's say you're an audio producer and you send a journalist to New York to cover the United Nations and all the environment pleadings and hearings, etc. You would then normally need a US work visa. You may also need some sort of certification for the equipment you're taking over, none of which you would need when you got on the Eurostar and went to Paris. I suspect that the British would most like to have the same absence of red tape going to the US that presently we have with going to Europe. But in trying to lessen the red tape with the US, by kind of softening one position, we harden another. It's a bit of a seesaw. We all love it. I love it. America's a wonderful country, but they don't tend to cut people favours.
Everything you said so far seems incredibly complex, and this is something that you specialise in, giving advice. I mean, your facial expressions are marvellous. Sad they don't translate on a podcast.
Sorry.
But no, not at all, not at all. But imagine people whose lives and professions are working in the creative industry. They've never had to deal with these sorts of issues, you know, goods, services, all that sort of, you know, trade negotiations. What is, therefore, you know, the advice to people within the industry?
Keep calm and carry on. And don't be too worked up by it. Change is inevitable. Change is a part of life. The only constant in life is change. Things will resettle. They will realign. We've never been a country that's kind of overloved regulation. So our direction of travel would be to make things logically less regulated. And hopefully that would work. But none of us know. The most interesting change will be by exiting the European market. Various things that we've taken for granted and we've got quite used to might suddenly change, but the British will invariably want to roll those over. The question will be to the extent to which the Europeans will allow us to roll it over.
In terms of the next day scenario then, after a deal or no deal or whenever this may come, do you therefore expect it will be a sort of case of you probably won't notice the difference initially?
Things like copyright originally came from the Berne Convention, which is the 1880s. That doesn't change. So if you look at, you can actually see how Europe has led intellectual property rights. So in 1993, we had the EU Term Directive, which extended copyright from life plus 50 to life plus 70 years. A few years later, Congress, under the Sonny Bono Term Extension Act, extended US copyright to align with the Europeans, because the Americans, again, are great producers of works, and why would they want a lesser copyright term to operate in the US, which meant they couldn't avail themselves within Europe? So things like copyrights, that really won't change. Things like data transfers, those rules are awesomely complex and not really ones we want to go into too much detail. At least we want to keep people awake, but they will probably change. But again, the British will just want to kind of copy and paste the European rules. It's not like we've got the bandwidth and desire to come up with our own unique data protection rules. So you've got to, actually, the Data Protection Act only changed last year under an EU directive. All of that stuff is incorporated into domestic law, etc. And I think as Europe changes things going forward on things like data, the British will have a real economic incentive to want to stay in line with that, because actually, we create the value.
Is there a concern, though, that what may be real or not real doesn't really matter? If you're perhaps starting up as an independent production company, or you're trying to think about growing, and you're looking at this environment and you're thinking, why would I bother? We don't know, because everything you explained, whether deal or no deal, will take years to unravel and to come to any sort of clarity.
I mean, what you're describing is almost a chilling effect.
Exactly. That, I was thinking about it in terms of media law, absolutely, is that you just wouldn't bother going for it because you're frightened of what may be out there.
And of course, I can understand that. All I would say is that most of our members, most producers, and a vast majority of economic activity operates within the United Kingdom. And so whilst this change is unsettling and unnerving for many people, I would think it would be very sad if people kind of put on hold their creative aspirations and their dreams to build something because of the fact that there are these changes. Because ultimately they will be navigated. All change is navigated. You know, we're all here for a certain amount of time. Things happen and then things move on. This will come to pass. audio production actually has lower barriers of entry. If you have a Mac, you have a computer, you have a phone, you can record your audio. You can get it. There's lots of distributors, whether it's, you know, Acast, Audible, etc. The Spotify, amazing platforms. The reason why, if you like, television is much more of an integrated pan-European or even pan-world, particularly UK-US, is partly because of the economics of the production. If you look at a Netflix production or an HBO production or a BBC partnership production, the budgets are millions and millions and millions. So if you look at, you know, I mean, there's a great French series called Spiral. I don't know if you've seen it, and that's BBC Canal Plus, and that'll be on BBC Four. But that'll be, even that's all recorded in France. That's a BBC co-pro. HBO, great series, also another great series, Succession. A lot of that is filmed out of the UK as well as the US. So everything is much more integrated actually on audio visual than it is for audio. One could say that's a shame, but I would say you could look at it the other way and say that just shows you how much more accessible audio is. You don't need these tie-ups. If you're creative, you have the ideas, there's never been a greater time to be able to actually go and do it and then find a platform to distribute it. So there are real opportunities, and I wouldn't want people to be fearful or too sad about this, at least in terms of the opportunities for the industry. I don't think this will have implications, particularly for touring and particularly for things whereby audio is being recorded outside the United Kingdom. So there will be implications. I can't pretend otherwise. But I think for a lot of our members, nothing will change, at least for some period of time.
So keep calm, carry on, seek out the opportunities, stay positive.
Yeah, smile. We have to at the moment of all times.
What a lovely way to end. Paul March, Audio UK's legal counsel, thank you so much.
Thank you very much, Georgie.
Brexit Ready is produced by Audio UK, the trade association for UK independent radio and audio producers. More details from audiouk.org. All the guidance contained in this podcast series has been compiled in good faith and is correct at time of publication. We would always advise checking for latest details on a reputable website. For example, you might try www.gov.uk/Brexit. I'm Georgie Frost. Charlotte North is the producer. Thanks for listening.